last time we blow this scene. Get everybody in the stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, let's jam.
Hello, good morning, everybody. This is Mark Chaffardini with Go See Talk. Welcome back to the Go See Talk podcast experience. Man, oh man, oh man, do we have an episode for you. Sun is shining. Birds are chirping. The world is talking about Cowboy Bebop. And as such, I thought it would be the perfect opportunity to bring two voices to the show, back to the site, back from the dead, if you speak. Robert Estelle and Peter Gullickers, two of my best friends, guys that started the site with us back 13, 14, 21 years ago. It is a joy to have them on the show. Always a joy talking to them, but today we're going to talk about Cowboy Bebop. Man, it's a mouthful. There's a whole lot to talk about. But guys, welcome to the show. Good to see you. How was your Thanksgiving?
I'll go with Pete first.
Oh, thanks, Rob and Mark. Thanks for having us, brother. It's always fun. Kind of surreal to be doing this with you. Here after Thanksgiving, man, we ate ourselves silly, spent time with the family, and I'm outside admiring some of my handiwork because we had to dig in some drainage out here. So being a family man never stops.
Joys of being a homeowner. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, and on my end, for those who aren't aware, I'm actually living in the land of the rise of the sun. So Thanksgiving for me was a work day. But I did partake of virtual turkey and cranberry, thanks to my sister and brother-in-law sending me lovely pictures of their gorgeous feast. So my mind and my stomach was there with everyone. So, but otherwise, you know, it's bright and early here in Japan, but happy to be here. Happy to chat Cowboy Bebop and happy to be with both of y'all.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Or kakui is the Japanese way of saying cool. As I've learned many things from Rob. As I said at the top of the show, our friendship goes back almost as long as Cowboy Bebop itself. We all met at Oklahoma State in 1998, which was the year that the show was released. So I don't know if it's some cosmic mojo or just some good old fashioned fun, but we bonded over many things. And one of them is a love of culture, love of music, a lot of fun. Things. Now, Pete actually didn't get into Cowboy Bebop until this live action show started. So it's kind of fun to get his take on it as a newcomer.
One thing I think, Mark, just to give our listeners and viewers some perspective. So one thing I had mentioned earlier when we were chatting about this offline is we have a wide spectrum between the three of us. So we have Pete being the casual enthusiast. We have Mark right in the middle. Mainstream enthusiast, and then you have me. Like I said, I'm living in the place where I can't get away from anime. It's on all the time, no matter where you go, and so I'm fairly knowledgeable in the way of how it is and where we're coming from, and even how the Japanese have taken a look at the new live action. So I'll be able to talk about that a bit later. But let's hear from Pete and see what he thought.
Man, thanks. No, Rob, I love the way you tee that up because it truly is. I don't have any context other than hearing you guys talk about it back in college. And I mean, of course, that song, the iconic intro song is so recognizable. So I knew that part of it. I knew this jazzy kind of, 40s noir detective kind of setting, if you will, that they were trying to go for with the tone. So when you guys sent out the teaser and the trailer, I was immediately hooked on wanting to see the show. But I will say, as we've been texting about this, kind of being that casual observer, that hook quickly came loose after a few episodes, and I was like, what in the world are they trying to do with this show? I did not know what direction they were going with the storylines and the plots. It kind of felt like they started in the middle of a lot of stories and didn't build on the characters that way. So all in all, I was left wanting for more. I think I wanted a more linear storyline as opposed to what seemed like jumping around to just various episodes within the callback to the anime, which I've never seen, but that's what it felt like. They were just jumping around from episodes to episodes.
Okay. That I think that's a valid actual response to it, because and you know, I think Mark will speak a little bit to this in a moment, but the original animation itself had some points where it really did kind of jump around. And so you're kind of wondering, is there this overall story arc that's going to be told over the whole series, or it's just kind of the bumbling mishap adventures of this bounty hunter crew? And so I think if you're kind of going in, you're not sure, is it or isn't it? And that's yeah. probably one thing, right? Like Faye shows up in the first episode and doesn't come back for like a couple episodes. You're like, wait, what happened there? You know?
That's right.
Definitely.
Yeah, I and really the whole bounty thing too. I mean, again, we just kind of started in on them looking for bounties, and I get where they were going, where they were kind of trying to use flashbacks to tell the story and leave you wanting a little more. But I almost and maybe this is me being you know, the casual observer, but I almost wanted them to tell the story from the perspective of them kind of being buddy cops, and follow them along going on the bounties, like make the episodes more about the bounties, and along the way you got some of that larger story arc from characters that tied the whole series mm-hmm. together, as opposed to just jumping from kind of scene to scene. But oh my gosh, visually, musically, I mean, if I could have watched the thing without having to try and follow the storyline, I loved it. It was like watching a live action comic book.
Yeah, actually, you know, Pete makes a great point. What you just said about kind of focusing more on the bounties and then kind of throwing in those hints of the backstories was something that actually happened more in the anime. And if you were to go back and watch the anime, it is, they pick up some of these major storylines from the anime's major episodes. But when they're doing this, there's not this, it's not like this random exposition or randomly, oh, now we're talking about Jet's kid or anything like that. It's more of, there's tones of their past, but you're not too worried about it. In fact, I think in the anime of the 26 episodes, there's only four or five that truly actually get in there and dig with the past. And that's more towards the end. So here, I totally get that point. But I also agree, the music's wonderful. They brought in the legendary Yoko Kanno, who penned the original music. She brought in her original band, the Seatbelts, who did the music for the original anime. All the original members came back for that. So in that perspective, yeah, music's wonderful. I agree. I enjoyed the visuals, because I think the thing is, you see with these comic books to live action or anime to live action is, you can't figure out which way they want to go. Is it going to be crappy CG, or is it going to be campy or anything? And I think a lot of people, when we had our discussion offline, was, are they going to go the Speed Racer route, which is actually fairly decent? You know, if you wanted to go that route, people would say, hey, that would look good. And I think overall, I think they did a good job. You know, people are a little worried with the intro, a little bit campy with how Spike was running, but then you look at it, and you know, it was good. I thought the visuals was great. The CG was wonderful. Nothing yeah. really jumped out. And it really created this dystopian future kind of universe, but still has that old school Western, are we in Havana kind of feel to it at times. Yeah. Mark, what do you think about all of this though?
Big picture here, I was supremely let down. I think, unfortunately, they going back to the show, and you know, Pete has the actually, you kind of have the luxury of not seeing what has come before, so you can kind of take this at face value. And what I got from it is that, yes, they didn't spare any money on the visuals. They really tried to make immersive sets. Mm-hmm. The casting, I think, was fantastic. I think the best casting decision in my opinion was Jet's character, I think he embodied Jet from the anime the most. John Cho was fine as Spike, and their banter, there's moments in the anime where they just start laughing. And so the fact that the show was able to pick up on that and you felt that there was some buddiness to them, it didn't feel like they just met each other yesterday. There was a history. But there were certain things about the introduction of Faye and the fact that, this is kind of getting ahead of it, you didn't really have the whole Bebop crew for this first season. You had, you were missing Ed, which makes this show a lot more fun and interesting. So not having that in, you know, and not having that band together, so to speak, kind of killed momentum. And, you know, the show is not really about, it's not formulaic, but what is interesting is these, the show is mostly about Spike's journey and everyone else is kind of secondary or tertiary to him. But there are side quests that pull the characters in different directions and make it fun. You have a one-off and it keeps it from just feeling like an episode of House, which I love House, but you know it's going to end the same way. Yeah. And the great thing about the show, this show and the anime, is that there's kind of a feeling of desperation. Everybody is, I'm not sure dystopian is what I would use, Rob, but they're definitely in a world where you're having to scrounge. There's a lot of loneliness, a lot of stillness. And I feel like the show rushed a lot of that and you didn't really
let Are you referring to desperation and the actors trying to carry the actual story or desperation just trying to get across the dystopian future?
I think it's more of just trying to live in the future because you saw they're always poor, you know? They're always trying to just get by, you know? The running joke is peppers, right? They're always eating peppers because in the anime, they're so broke, they can't buy the beef to go with the peppers. Mm-hmm. So here's your beef and peppers, sans beef is usually the how it worked. And so that's all they did.
And that's kind of that's kind of the formulaic aspect of it. It's like no matter what bounty they take down, there's either something that wipes out their savings or, you know, they need a part of the ship, which, you know, kills all of their coffers, so to speak, and they just keep in this rut of just trying to, like a gambler in a way, just trying to get the next score just to stay afloat. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that was missing in this show. You got a taste of it, but it, you know, having having 20 years of living with these characters and the music, of course you're going to go in with a whole lot more expectations. But let's turn it back to you, Pete. What I took from this is it felt like really good cosplay, but really good plus cosplay does not a great narrative make. So my perception is I see all these DC properties where the Titans and Legends of Tomorrow and all these things. And to me, it looks like it's about the same thing. So I'm not sure it's live action that killed it. I think it's a selection of storylines and the things they did with this show that didn't meet and the liberties taken. But how do you feel? You're a big DC fan. So how do you feel that this compares to what's happening on WB and CW and stuff like that?
Well, I mean, we could do a whole other series of podcasts on the DC universe. I'll actually swing it in a slightly different direction, right? So kind of going back to where I started with the trailer catching me and that music being so iconic. The show felt like I heard a snippet, right? Almost like some popular music, and I heard a snippet that got my attention. But then when I went and listened to the album, aka watched the show, I was really disappointed with how the album went, right? So we had like a hit single that got my attention with that trailer and the music, and it just being so exciting and so much energy to the show. And then when I went to the album and actually watched the show, I was really let down with the journey of the musicians, if you will. And we texted about this too, right? You know, the movie the series rather leaned in so hard to that noir jazz that every episode kind of felt like jazz music too, where there were parts where you fell in love with it. But if you're not a true lover of jazz, it could be hard to love an entire season or entire album of jazz if you don't know enough about it. So again, coming from the casual perspective, there were moments, hooks in songs, if you will, that captured me. But that's maybe where my casual viewership and my listening ear was looking more for that continuity that you said just wasn't there. You know, you said the show, the series was more about Spike and his journey. I didn't feel like we got to know Spike until halfway through the season. It started out that way where we knew about Spike, and then it kind of went on some detours for a while until we came full circle with him. So, but I imagine too, that's a little bit how I feel about jazz music, right? It kind of goes off in very unexpected directions. And I guess there's beauty in that too, though, right? I mean, and that's why I'm holding out, you know, optimism for the series.
That's a fair point.
Let me kind of jump in with some of my thoughts. So, you know, you both bring up some really great points. And I think, you know, I'm always the optimistic one, I think, of the group, because it's like, you know, I you know, in the end, I'm going to like it because of what it is, but I do have my nitpicks. And one thing that really got me was, so if we talk from my opinion with casting, one, I agree, Jet was perfect. I actually fairly enjoyed John Cho as Spike. You know, I mean, he pulled the outfit, he pulled the hair, he did the mannerisms, but almost got to the point at the end where it's like, okay, we get it, got the mannerisms, but do you get the characters? And I think the overall kind of response that I get is I love the casting, but aside from Jet, they all felt a little shallow. And we talk a little bit about the backstories, and in the original series, it is supposed to be not necessarily dystopian, but desolate. You know, people are poor, they're working their way around. You know, there was an accident that makes Earth uninhabitable. So that's how they've colonized the rest of the solar system and all that. But in the series, there's not a lot of talk about Jet and his family. There's not a lot of, I mean, there's the whole deal with Faye and amnesia, but there's not a super lot of talk about it. I mean, the biggest kind of swings and flashbacks you get is Spike. And so when they took liberties, like making Jet divorced with a daughter, that was in the anime. It was just an ex-girlfriend. But, you know, kind of, they all end up just being kind of in a situation that sucks in the end. You know, Jet has a strong sense of honor, but he always gets screwed over. Faye has amnesia, but she can't figure out what she's doing. And Spike is running from a past that he just can't get away from because of his love for Julia and all that. And so my biggest kind of problem, the biggest thing that bothered me the most was the fact that I don't mind some of the liberties, you know, how they changed some of the things. I appreciate that they made it, hey, this is not your, and you got to think Cowboy Bebop originally wasn't your kid's TV show to begin with, but now they make it where they're dropping the F-bomb, they're dropping the C-bomb, there's nut buckets, nut bags, and nut twinkles, and whatever you want to call it. And there was an episode with quite a bit of gratuitous nudity, and I felt unneeded to the point that I was like, you know, we don't need to go hard boiled. That was a little too much. And so I think that kind of turned me off, where I'm like sitting there and, you know, I'm like, okay, it's decent. You know, I can watch this downstairs, you know, in the evening, do a quick episode while we're waiting to put the kids in the bath. And next thing you know, oh, it's titty shots. I'm like, shit, gotta turn off the TV. Kids are in there, you know? And I'm like, whoops. I'm like, yeah. And so there was that. I think that was
Rob,
I love how
you're talking about language and gratuitous thing, and you're cussing.
I dropped the S-bomb. We'll have a beep there. That's on Mark to do. So my biggest thing was the liberties. And I think the one thing that'll surprise you, Pete, is at the end, the whole reality of the Julia story, which they did take from the anime. I mean, and some of it was shot for shot. I mean, the whole thing where he's shot and he goes out the cathedral glass. I mean, the music they play is the exact same music. The music they play when he goes, Rain, is the exact same song. I was hoping they'd play the Call Me song. They didn't. The thing is with Julia is, in the original anime, she gets killed.
So, and basically...
Well, Rob, I know there's a statute of limitations, but that's a spoiler 20 years ago in the very last episode of the season.
Well, I mean, you know, but I mean, the thing is, it's actually, was it the last episode? Wasn't there one after that?
No, that was Real Folk Blues Part 2. Yes,
yeah, that's right. You're right. But the whole point of it is, you know, Spike goes out and all that. And the one thing that they do with this, I know we're talking spoilers and spoilers, but Netflix has also admitted that, you know, we never said Ed wasn't in the story, and he is, or she is, but they do it in a way that says, hey, there's going to be a sequel. And the original series was never written to have a sequel made. It was written where Spike ends up dying. It's written that Julia dies, Vicious dies, Jet goes on his way, Faye goes off to search for a way, and Ed as well. So they all go on their ways, and here we get this, hey, you know what, if this goes well enough, let's make a series. And I'm like,
couldn't they do that over a couple of seasons though, Rob? I mean,
so, you know,
I can see where they're trying to take it. I think where I would really lean into what you're saying is if they started introducing new characters.
I think
as long as they stuck with the core characters and developed them over a couple of seasons, I would be all in on it, right? But if they started taking all these tangents and introducing new people and jumping the shark after so long, then I would take exception to that.
Well, I get that. Yeah.
Well, there is something to be liberties taken. Like I too was sort of miffed, like Rob was, about the violence, the language, and the nudity, just to the point where it imagine Star Wars, you know, even if it has its rough moments, you know, somebody gets their hand cut off, or like, you know, the Temple of Doom, or somebody gets their heart ripped out. This is like unneedlessly taking it to the next level, just to push the envelope. And it's not that there weren't weird things. Like there was this one point where I think it was in, Waltz for Venus or Jupiter Jazz, where Faye's looking for Spike and she walks in on two guys in bed together. And it's like a blink and you miss it moment, but it's not like none of this stuff doesn't happen, but just to sort of push it to the forefront, just to say that you're progressive. And then to the next level, you know, Julia was a nothing character, absolutely nothing, not meaningless, just she had no part. Now you're making her a power player. She's overtaking characters like Vicious, to the point where now she's the head of the syndicate. She's the one who shoots Spike out the cathedral window. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the anime, she wasn't even, again, she doesn't show up in the very last episode.
And she was dead at that point. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, now giving people backstory is not wrong. And just because you don't like the backstory doesn't make it a bad backstory. But I think that the universe has spoken when you look at Rotten Tomatoes, both critics and the audience score. There's just a lot happening to a beloved franchise that, in my opinion, it would have been better served to have Spike and Jet have like a prequel series, maybe a 5 or 6 episode, how they met, get to know each other, and then you can introduce these new characters. I think that would have been a good way forward rather than taking things that people were really expecting to see, like the Teddy Bomber episode. What was missing from the Teddy Bomber episode is another dueling bounty hunter, a guy who rode a horse. Mm-hmm. And he was like the equivalent of Spike. Now everybody thinks that Faye is annoying and has some rough mannerisms, but Spike can be annoying. And when he finds his alter ego in this cowboy, literally a cowboy, they get on each other's nerves so much that the bounty hunter, or that the bounty they're after, gets so annoyed. It's a really hysterical episode, but like something like that would have been fun to see. And when you strip it down to like just having Teddy in a couple shots and you get away from what made those episodes fan favorites in the beginning, it just sort of signals that this ship is not going to go right. And for that respect, I think that you needed Ed, I think, to write the ship. And by the time Ed surfaces, I'm like, I'm done. I think there's nothing more for me here.
Mark, you don't sound too optimistic about a second season.
No, these guys are very there's nothing
left to do, so to say, because they literally, when they took the original 26 episodes, and and they picked and choose. I actually went back and I reviewed it, and I'm like, you know, the episodes that they picked for the main storylines for most of the main bounties are the iconic episodes. It's just they added or changed things, you know, like the Ganymede was not turning him into trees. It was turning him into like dogs or something like that. I can't remember quite, but you get this thing where it's like you said, what Mark just said, hey, there's this scene where Faye walks in on two guys, and you know, for 1998, that's progressive. Now it's full blown on, hey, Faye is having a moment where she's figuring out this is what she's been missing with somebody of the same sex. And I'm like, oh, that's great, but that's not needed. That's like extra exposition that's not needed. And at the end, you know, they've all gone off on their way, and how it started with the ended with the original show is, so you have the beginning, you have these iconic episodes, and then they end up doing the Vicious and Spike story, the Real Folk Blues, in the last episode, and you're done. Except then they bring in the possibility. Now, the other thing that really bothered
Rob, before you go on to a new topic, I'm going to throw a hard transition in, just like they did in the show. You guys are getting deep on this novice over here who has no clue what you guys are talking about anymore. plus, here's what I'm proposing. I'm going to let you guys go deep because we got to jump to a soccer game on my side of the world over here. My stepson made it to the semifinals, so that game got scheduled late before we had any chance to reschedule our podcast. So I'm going to let you guys go deep into the episodes now, and let this casual non-jazz listener pop out. But you know, I love you guys. I can't wait to hear the podcast. And you know what they say: when you're not on the call anymore, you can make fun of everybody who's not there.
Next time, let's meet up in the DC podcast. I think you threw out a good idea. I'd love like to talk too. About all these flashes and green arrows and all these things. And is that stuff still popular? All right, yeah.
All right, guys, I love you. Take care.
All right. Well, then that leaves you and me for the deep, deep talk, right?
Yeah, this is the spoilers. Spoilers aplenty. End of the podcast.
Yeah, well, if you haven't been spoiled enough, there's nothing left to spoil. I'm going to jump right into it. I was surprised at how gun happy Spike was. When you think about it in the anime, it was more of him doing, I think it was Junkido or one of his martial arts. And he fought more than and shot later. You know, fists first, guns later. Now it's just like boom, 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 boom. And all of a sudden, I sent the text where they do this one episode, episode 9, which is, here's the backstory of Vicious and Spike. You never see in the show. It's only hinted at. It's hinted that, you know, Spike or Vicious was dating Julia, and that Spike had an affair with Julia, and that's how it all happened, blah, blah, blah. Here, you get the whole thing. You get this and that, and you go into that into... and it was that episode, because then it's this whole, you know, Vicious screws up, Spike goes to clean up after him, and then you get this massive John Wick sequence. John Wick meets old dog, where you're scrolling across right. The way, and it's like, Jesus. I'm like, yeah, badass, but that wasn't what Cowboy Bebop was. My only other nitpick as well was, he survived all of that to come back to the ship, the Bebop, to have Jet kick him off and leave. I'm like, at least give him his ship. Like, give him the swordfish. I'm like, that's my biggest thing. It's like, offload the son of a bitch and at least let him go somewhere, you know? But, yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, I want to like it. I do like it if I can... If you separate it from the anime, then I think, you know, the visuals, it's a decent sci-fi Western, wants to be Firefly, wants to be, you know, that kind of idea of thing. Just, yeah.
Well, I think, unfortunately, one way to salvage this is, I think that we could have been more succinct with the length of the show, you know. Mm-hmm. You've got sort of a random, I would say it's a random allotment of time. You've got some episodes that are like 39 minutes, some are topping close to 50. Again, I really hate to go back to the anime, but you know, those are 22, 24 minutes, and they seem to do a lot more in less time. Whereas I just felt like these were a chore to get through. And I think that if you could cut down some things, strip things out, and also maybe reorder things, I think that, you know, waiting until the end to sort of show Vicious's ascension, maybe put them towards the beginning and make him a threat. Maybe it could have been the third or fourth episode. Cause I think that after two, it just got like, oh man, this is painful to watch.
Yeah.
And fan or not, I actually felt for Pete to the point where, like, if somebody's coming into this new, I could just feel like, you know, not to lean on short attention span theater, but, you know, you're watching this happening and you're just going, where are we going? This is just...
Yeah, you know, first episode sets it up. You're like, okay, this is good. Faye seems interesting. The banter's good. Okay. And then second episode, totally different. Totally Faye's not around. And then you get it just kind of jumps around a little too much. Yeah. Which, you know, you got to think the anime did it as well, but I think it did it in a way that was a lot better. And as a bit of a tangent or an offshoot, you bring up a good point with the recent, and this is something I thought of as well, recent kind of thing where you see Netflix or Amazon Prime or Disney Plus doing these random minute counts. And I think that was the same with like Loki. Well, if we talk Disney, I think Loki and Winter Soldier and Falcon as well, I think had some episodes that were a little variable in time. And, you know, it's a thing that gets really annoying because you're like sitting here and you're like, okay, this is, or actually, you know, a good one is even Apple TV, and you know, totally wonderful show, to the point that it's almost too good. Ted Lasso is a victim of this as well. I mean, those episodes go anywhere from 40 minutes to like an hour and five. So you're like, you sit down, you're like, oh, I got 40 minutes, and you're like, wait, it's not done yet. So yeah, I see that's something that happens a lot now, and there is this. It's kind of weird. Are we doing 10 episodes? Are we doing 24? Are we doing 15? Are we doing 6? And it seems like the streaming, the giants are going more of the 10 episode route recently, but you know, I don't know. So that's a very good point. But I think, you know, we're nitpicking on some of the things. Obviously and I think what I've seen the reactions from the Japan side is a lot of people find the first episode interesting. They think it's great. It's funny. And then by the time they're done, some of the hardcore fans, just like, I guess you could say we are, come back to say that the characters end up being shallow, that they're going through the motions. And there's a little bit of, you know, and this kind of comes back to what Pete said, where you have the range of, do you, I don't want to say spoon feed the story, but you give them the backstory, you give them this, you give them the motive versus here's hints and you fill it in your mind, right? And so in the anime, you knew that he was a member of the syndicate. You knew he got out for some reason. You knew there was something between him and Julia and there was a feud between him and Vicious, and that was that. Here it's like you said, we get this whole background. You know, they fell in love, and then, you know, she sees him go Vicious. I mean, if you're dating a guy who goes by the name of Vicious, I mean, if you can't figure out that, I'm like, you know, he sees the guy, he's like, runs him down. I'm like, lady. You know, so you got Vicious and Fearless. At least Fearless, you know, he likes to bungee jump, skydive. He's fearless. Vicious is going to run you down and gut you. Think about it. You're dating the wrong guy.
Rob, that was beautiful. That is beautiful. But,
so that's where I come back to the what I'm seeing from the Japanese audience is it starts off good. At the end of, like, you know, the kind of the charm of the original show, and even the original director who was involved in all this and kind of reading some of the old interviews, originally he didn't want a sequel. He created it to end that way. And one of the things was he got a lot of flack originally when they were trying to do it, because, you know, this is an interesting backstory, is when they originally were doing Cowboy Bebop and developing it, it was Bandai who came to him and said, a la Transformers, we want to sell toys. What can you do? Here's make some spaceships. And so they said, do whatever you want. When you brought him back to Bandai, Bandai's like, we can't sell this crap. You know, he brought up the story and this and it's all that. And it was in a bit of development hell. And then the other subsidiary of Bandai, Bandai Visual, picked up and said, do whatever you want. And then he said, well, I already had the story. I had the end. It wasn't going to be continued. And there was a lot of blowback. But, you know, it took off and it was a huge hit. I mean, I was thinking back on this. I mean, we bought this for our listeners and viewers, VHS. We're talking two episodes on one VHS tape for $25. 2021, that's like $100 given in, I don't know. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but it's certainly not $25 now. So,
no, absolutely.
We started at the beginning. The other thing that, although the Japanese audience is giving it high marks on, is the voice cast. And the reason they're giving it high marks in the voice cast, and so this is kind of unrelated to you and me, is because we actually watched this dubbed. And actually, Cowboy Bebop is one of the best English dubbed animes out there. So we've never actually listened to it in Japanese, but they actually got the original Japanese cast to come back and voice it. So
for the Netflix show?
Yeah, original Japanese, so not just the music, but the original Japanese voice cast, everybody came back, reprised their roles, and did it. So in that respect, it gets high marks for the music, it gets high marks for the voice actors who are dubbing it into Japanese and whatnot. So, but at the same time, you know, I think some people are also just saying, you know, shallow, a little too much exposition, especially with Jet and his family. And to me, with Jet, I think, although in the show, Jet is always kind of getting screwed over. He's just trying, he's got a strong sense of justice, trying to get along, just doing what's right. And he never kind of works out. And to me, the one time that, and this is why I think he was ended up being the best character, is at the last episode, where they shoehorned the daughter into the vicious fight and all that. And he brings it back to his ex-wife, and she calls the guy that his ex-wife married, his partner, ex-partner, or somebody he worked with, I guess, daddy. And I was like, wow. And then that's how that, I don't know, for me, that really hit it home, that they did Jet the best. Faye, I don't know. I mean, she packed up and she went on her way. That's kind of similar to how it happened in the original. It's just there wasn't a lot of filler in between, except for the maybe I swing this way moment and all that. So, yeah.
Well, it's unfortunate because, I mean, you know, you've got Shinichiro Watanabe, who created the show. It was released in 1998 to almost universal acclaim. And again, one of the greatest, if not the greatest anime of all time, really praised for its technical merit, the budget, but also the, you know, it's one of the few dub casts that actually get some credit for doing a fantastic job. I mean, you know, you hear those voices and they immediately take you back. They fit the character. Yep. They don't seem like, hey, we just found somebody off the street and you're going to be a bounty hunter. It was pitch perfect, but it felt like, you know, what was great about the show is it was released at the time in episodes so that you had some time for the episodes to percolate. Mm-hmm. And you even had what seems like a mid-season, it was the Waltz for Venus or Jupiter Jazz part 1 and 2, to the point where, hey, there's some stakes to this. What's going to happen next? And I think what happens with all of this, you know, releasing everything at the same time, which I think Apple's doing a good job about. They're releasing it in parcels as opposed to the whole season and just making it binge worthy, it builds up anticipation. And I just hate to dog on this show, but it's just, it's a dog, it's a chore. And it's, I mean, there are some things that are done right. I did like you said, Jet just can't win. And a lot like the anime, no matter what they do, they always find themselves not very far ahead from where they were. The little sequence in episode two where they're trying to get the doll, you know, he buys it from somebody and it gets destroyed. And then he gets, he gets a scalped price for it, and he's trying to find, and at the end of the day, he just says, forget it, I'm done with this. But
I mean, in a way, that's how they also kind of shoehorn Ayn in there too, which is an interesting way. So that was different. So, you know, I kind of look at it. I mean, you're absolutely right on the voice cast, because that the voice actor who did Spike, even to this day, when I hear him doing whatever role, I'm like, that's Spike. You know, I think that set that mood for us. I also agree that you're right. It did allow us time to percolate. It's a slow boil. I think that's what we're looking for here, versus here's 10 episodes. We've taken, you know, eight or so of the major kind of plot lines or episodes and condensed them somehow and threw in a bunch of extra stuff. And now it's not a slow boil. It's a, we kick off with the Penulet first episode, same as the anime, ends pretty much the same way, except you throw in Faye and you start remixing them. But then you just go off in a tangent to the point to, like, do we care where the Red Eye was made or how or why? I mean, you know, that was that. Now, on the music part, let's get off that. I mean, you know, at the end, I mean, the thing is, I it's not that I felt like it was a waste of time. I think they did a decent job. I thought, you know, you're right, a lot of it was cosplay, but to a point you get to it at the end, Jet looked like Jet to me. I mean, Spike looked like Spike to me. Faye was Faye, so I didn't have too much of a problem with that. But let's switch over to music. I mean, music, I thought, you know, Tank just being that opening, you know, this is the one time where I had watched the premiere and I watched a little video on YouTube and like, what do you think of Tank? And everybody's like, we love it, blah, 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 blah. And they're like, somebody goes, you know what? They should just take away the skip intro button. And I watched every episode and never skipped it once.
I'm very proud of you. That's diehard.
I'm like, skip, get past it, skip out. Now I'm like, nope, I'm like this. And I mean, even a couple of the episodes, if you kind of go back, I can't remember which one it is, three or four, they emphasize different things. There was one episode where they go into the baseline and it's more emphasized in the intro and all that. But yeah, you know, the music was great. I had watched an interview that Yoko Kanno did, and she said that they created about 80-90% new music. And that when I heard that and then I went through it, I didn't feel like they created 90%. I mean, we had Tank, we had Rain, we had the Ave Maria song at the end, we had a couple of the fight sequences songs were the same. I think more of the BGM, there's a couple of festive poppy tunes, but that was about it. I don't know. I mean, it felt comfortable. It was stuff I knew, but nothing new jumped out at me in my perspective.
I mean, I'm actually shocked that, well, first of all, thank you for doing the research and getting some numbers on that stuff. But yeah, I didn't notice anything new either. I did notice there was a couple times where if the plot caused the action to sour or something weird, the music either stopped or tapered off in a way that didn't feel like they just hit pause. It was tailored to what was happening on screen. But and one thing I did notice is that the Rain song where Spike is in the cathedral, they did the version with the guy singing, not the woman singing, which was another deviation from the anime. To Pete's point, this is geeky stuff that we're getting into that he'd be like, what are you talking about? But it's in little moments like that, that if you're going for continuity, that's one thing. If you're going to take liberties, that's another thing. But I just feel like I'm not saying that this the creators didn't have an understanding or a passion for the source material. They just didn't know what to do with it. And a lot of what made the show, what should have made the show impacting, is the scale of things and the moments of stillness and the sort of the loneliness that is inherent in each of these characters, which just seemed like it didn't exist. They just sped through things where you should have had, I mean, there's a lot can be done with less. And so, you know, I watched 8 or 9 episodes yesterday. And what I remembered, thankfully, is that I wasn't watching this show with rose-colored glasses. The show does stand up. The show is a universal phenomenon because it is so well done. But there's a lot of sequences where it's just, maybe it's a pan through a scenery or like a cityscape. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a view from above the circling fan in the Bebop. Just some moments of to breathe. And I still feel like you had 40 minutes in each episode, twice of the amount that's in the show originally, and it still felt like you rushed everything. So I just couldn't understand how, I think they missed that.
You're right. There was some points where it just felt like there's like filler shots, yet you come back and you're like, yeah, why are we rushing through all this? I mean, to me, I think the one episode where they're doing the Londis thing where he goes and he's looking for Londis and he gets sucked in to the AI and then they get in the Bebop and they rush to Earth. I'm like, you know, that felt really rushed. You know, we don't know where they are to begin with, but they're not on Earth. And yet they figure out we got to go to Earth and they rush to Earth, they crash land Earth and they get in and then she shoots the gun and right at, you know, 98%. And I'm like, how does that work physically? You know, I mean, you know, there's one episode where they're talking about if we leave now, we can get there in a day or something. You know, I'm assuming they're saying clicks. I'm assuming that meant an hour, right? Next thing you know, they're here and Spike's doing something. We got to get in there and boom, we're there. And then we I mean, some of it was just like a little too, that was like, okay, where you reality or not. And we know that you can't really nitpick too much because it is a sci-fi show. But, you know, there was a little bit of areas where you're trying to, you have to kind of suspend your belief almost, you know, because of that. I was thinking a couple of things that popped out. One more note about music is the Real Folk Blues does play in one episode. They play it at the end of episode 9, which is Blue Crow Waltz, which is the flashback episode. So that was interesting that they did at least use the Real Folk Blues once. But yeah, from there it just kind of went. So, and I guess we talk about we talked about it and so from a casual viewpoint, you know, I really love the metaphor that Pete gave. The song Tank, it gets you like this is going to be a great album. And you get in and you got 10 tracks and you think, all right, track one is awesome. And then you find out half the tracks are just eh. But I also think he came back and said, you know, this thing with jazz. Jazz is all over the place. You know, I'm not a jazz fan myself either. I mean, the closest of a jazz fan I get is listening to Cowboy Bebop or some of the original. And this is a tangent. But if we go back to our favorite R4, the Ridge Racer Type 4 for our old school fans.
Laura, there's only one spot left.
That's right. Some of that music there was very jazzy, but we're not talking about like jazz going in there. When Jet's talking to his partner Fad about, you know, that's the whole thing. He's creating music on the fly. I'm like, yeah, you know, I don't get that either. So, yeah, but, you know, yeah. I do kind of want a melody sometimes, you know? So,
yeah, no, I think that's apropos. It's accurate. You know, if I have to give some more credit, there were some fun elements. A lot of the choreography really seemed like it was well thought out. That first episode, it did feel like a TV show. You know, it did feel like you were watching something on TBS or something very Firefly-esque. But yeah, I think they're working within their means. And you know, there is a scale that cannot be maintained or attained in this live action realm. I mean, I don't know how they do it in movies, but you know, they clearly could have done it for this and they kind of fell on the sword. But there's this one funny sequence that does two things. it gives some good exposition, and it also is fun to watch and has a laugh at itself. It's the part where Jet is participating in his daughter's recital via some technology that puts
that's
him in the room.
That's what I was thinking.
And so you're seeing...
And in the background.
Yeah. Yep. But you're all, you know, what it does is it doesn't just say, oh, this is fun to watch, because you're getting the juxtaposition of, you know, he's completely oblivious. Jet's enjoying the recital and he's dancing along and Jet's just kicking ass behind him. But it also shows Jet, shows the audience that Spike is competent. He's trained. And this leads to that John Wick scene in episode 9, where he becomes like an unstoppable, goes on a warpath. So it shows that he's trained, he's got a history, and it's a good way of not spoon feeding you with a little spoon as opposed to a huge ladle. So I did like that.
That is actually a great point. And I think that episode and that scene, that is something that harkens back to the original anime. I think that's perfect in saying that kind of interaction. We're doing this while you see something happening in the background, and then he's like, oh okay, well, do you need help? I'm all good, you know. And I'm like, I thought that was wonderful. It's like they should have had more, not to say scenes like that, but more scenes with that kind of style of exposition, or you know what I'm trying to say, something that came and gave the audience that kind of feeling that, you know, hey, you know, he's trying to do his life, or he's packing up his partner, and I mean all that. So in that sense, it was good. It was good. So, but I think we come back, and as you said, I didn't look at it with rose colored glasses either. I mean, I had gone back actually, and watched a few episodes just on and off over the last couple of years. You know, it's kind of, you revisit a couple of the episodes you like best. But I went in, and I mean, I enjoyed it for what it is. At the same time, because we know where it's coming from, we have that unconscious, or maybe not even that, we have that conscious bias that we're just not going to be able to get around it. So it's kind of like we're always going to end up being, I like it, but... And I think that is an unfortunate thing that happens with any property that you see make the jump, say from a comic book or a manga to a TV show or an anime or to a movie and to a video game. It's, if we were to talk about, you know, Marvel, with Marvel having a great, what, I guess 15 years with the MCU up through Infinity War. And then for those who may or may not be familiar, then you go and look at somebody who says, we know that Tony Stark is Robert Downey Jr. You know, we know Chris Evans is Captain America, blah, blah, blah. And then you go and say, oh, we're going to create this AAA Avengers video game, and we're not going to get the likeness. And then you have that jarring thing. So this is a thing. They created a game, came out, and it's not great. It's not bad. I haven't played it. I'm not going to buy it because it doesn't look like it. And the thing is, they made the characters not look like them, but sort of look like them. So, you know, it's like, it's Tony Stark with the goatee, but it's not Robert Downey Jr. And then he opens his mouth and it's not his voice, you know? So it's, that's that bias that you have. And so once you get so ingrained with this, it really is hard to kind of, unless you're not familiar with that original source material, go into it with a 100% open mind. So with that said, in the end, I will say I enjoyed it for what it is. It's not perfect. I don't think we needed as, I could have handled the cussing to an extent. I don't think I did not need the nudity. I was almost a little too gun happy with Spike. Or in general, I mean, I think there's some areas where it's going along and then you get this flash of gratuitous violence, not just nudity. But I think for me, the episode with the Ganymede sea rats, and now we turn them into a tree. In the first episode, the CEO, who they're trying to, you know, the eco-terrorists are trying to coerce, gets gassed, and she turns into a tree. And you see her head like pops. And you're like, that's not what I'm expecting to see in Cowboy Bebop. I'm like, whoa. So there was a few areas where I'm, you know, and I think we had talked about this a little when we were chatting via Messenger, and I think it was just maybe we're getting old. You know, we have kids. We're like, you know, if we were in our 20s again, we'd be like, yeah. Now we're like, no. We don't need to go that far. We get it. No. So I'm like, kids aren't around. Okay. When you get to that point, you're like, it's a little too much. Yeah.
Well, you know, I thought that too. And you brought up the earlier about we don't need to know where the red eye comes from. And just the whole sequence where Vicious is trying to get rid of his manufacturing and just the personnel working at the facility, what the things that were done to them. It just that whole sequence just seemed straight out of left field. And when you talk about the tree episode with the Ganymede Sea Wretch, it's like the things just kept going. I don't know if they were pushing the envelope, so to speak, but it just seemed unnecessary. And it's funny you bring this up because I've actually stopped watching a lot of horror now that I am a dad and, you know, here I am in the 40s. But just, you know, I understand what I like. I understand what I can tolerate. And some things are just unnecessary. So it wasn't that it was off-putting. It was unnecessary in this universe. And so it felt like a stretch.
How about this, though? Now, I think there was a, you or Pete said earlier, if they would have reworked it, or you said earlier, if we would have brought the Vicious part up a little earlier to establish that this is why he's vicious,
then that
would have worked better, right? If we would have known that, yeah, he is a vicious, you know, sadistic son of a bitch who saw his mother commit suicide in front of him, who son of a syndicate, you know, Lord and blah, 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 and all this. And you see that, then you'd be like, okay, yeah, so he doesn't care about human life or whatever. But no, you don't get any of that. You get this random, let's just shoot them all. And you're like, where'd that come from? So I don't know. They could have, you know, gratuitous nudity aside, it could have been just a timing issue. The only other thing, and I know this is a random thing, I really liked this is a very random thing. I honestly liked the clothing. And I say this for the syndicate, especially Spike was perfect, but I actually thought the clothing that they gave Vicious was perfect. And I loved how they color coded the, if you really look at it, they put in a lot of effort with the syndicate. And the three kind of, and if you want to talk just random, the eunuch and that were like, okay. But they were color coded, right? So, you know, I thought it was interesting that Vicious was red. And I believe that the eunuch was blue. And I think Mal was green or something like that. And then you'd see, depending on their level, they had the different suits. So I actually thought, they made them all look really good in syndicate clothing. So that was one area that I enjoyed.
That is very fascinating to hear. I think, I mean, again, having these characters expanded upon is not a bad thing, and introducing new characters, not either. But it seemed weird. You know, Mao was a guy in the anime, and he was killed very early on. And he actually had a bounty on him because he killed members of the syndicate or members of the triad, whatever it was. But for them to have sort of, you know, let's just say a plan of attack where they were going to not attack the syndicate head on, they were going to make it, you know, basically do a Trojan horse thing, and then it backfired, but then it turned out to be Julia's idea, is a whole nother thing. It's interesting, and I like kind of like what they did there. But yeah, I can back you up on the threads and the things that the people wore to make each other stand out, which was very well
done. If we talk about Julia, we won't stop, because I think that's the biggest, not to say crime, but that's the biggest change, because Julia was the figurehead. She was she was the reason that Spike and Vicious had the falling out, and that's it. They met up, she dies, and that's it. In the anime here, she's given a much bigger, she's now the damsel in distress, the damsel who has to be saved, until she turns around and she shoots. And I think that last part where, you know, we kind of come back and we're like, okay, Spike believed what Vicious told him, that Juliet chose him. And then she's like, you believed him? He's like, well, I'm just getting shot. What the fuck do you think I was? That's me. That's what do you think? And then she's like, all right, well, screw you. Boom. I'm like, well, what the? That whole part was just kind of like, we go from damsel in distress to, you know, I'm now the head of everything. I was like, okay, sure, whatever. But they do leave it open now. When you think about it, that's the open end now. Now, this is the, as Pete said, could they do a sequel? I think Cowboy Bebop fans would riot of the original one. I think they would riot because now, yeah, okay, Spike survives. Now we see Ed come in because there's a cameo at the end, and who was perfect, I would say. And you see Vicious is still alive. So yeah, if they wanted to do it and they bring them back together and they pull in some of the other episodes, if they try and do Knocking on Heaven's Door, they could potentially do it, but now it's, what do they do? You know, they've taken the big ending of Cowboy Bebop, the original ending, and they've thrown it out the window. So literally with Spike. Yeah.
I feel like they were definitely painted themselves in a corner by not having the whole team together, because not having Ed in the series meant you couldn't go to certain plot lines. Mm-hmm. You couldn't do certain things, which I got to credit them. They did what they could. I'm not a fan, but I can definitely see there's a lot of passion put into it. I did read one, a blurb from one of the Rotten Tomato critics reviews, and it said, this was a show that was like having a robot play jazz, where it plays the notes right, but there's no feeling behind it. So
back to the Shallow comment.
So yeah. I think that there's definitely, I mean, clearly there's an opportunity for it to grow and become something different. Mm-hmm. Different is not necessarily good when you think of something like, you know, The Force Awakens. It is a very thinly veiled remake of episode 4, but it's familiar. It plays within the realm. It's new and introduces some things, but still has respect for what came before. And I think that, I don't know, maybe
if we go on to Star Wars, we'd never finish, and you'd lose half your fans depending on what we said.
Thank you for reining me in there. I was going to be positive about Star Wars, but I think
I enjoyed The Force Awakens. It has everything you said, but I do not enjoy what Rian did in episode 8, and then leaving it to being Indiana Jones meets Star Wars for episode 9, and let's try across the universe for the fallback on whatever. They screwed the pooch on that. They should have brought in Kevin Feige for that. That's what they should have done.
Well, let's think of one way that they could have wrote the ship. Yeah. Do you think that having Shinichiro Watanabe as a consultant, but not writing, not doing anything else, do you think that that was a good move or a bad move?
I think it was at least a good move, in at least saying, hey, you know, we want to respect the material, we want to respect, who created it and get his perspective. And to a certain extent, you have to think that they're green lighting it with him, because otherwise, you know, you would have this thing where you go and you create something, and then you find out the original creator said this is crap, blah 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 blah, and then you have this big hubbub. So I think absolutely bringing him in and potentially allowing him to give some advice, say, let's do that, let's do this, you know, is great. You know, the thing is, we don't know. I haven't heard a lot of interviews with him on what he thinks, what his thoughts are. And, you know, what we can obviously hope is this actually says, okay, this is interesting. Maybe they'll do another season. Maybe they won't. But the original, at least people will go back and watch the original and see the music and enjoy it. Because, you know, the original is, when you think about it, aside from being a slightly, you know, about 70 years or actually from today or this year, 50 years in the future, you know, it's actually not anything about a fantasy world. It's not about giant robots. It's not about, you know, zombies or any of this, you know, fantasy stuff like that. It's actually a real sort of human drama. And when you think about that, that I think that's one of the appeals of Cowboy Bebop to begin with. As you said, it's about kind of the flaws that these characters have, trying to make it in a flawed world. And there's no other kick. There's no cool robot. There's no harem of cute anime girls or anything like that. It's just a human drama. And I think that was one of the first ones to come out in the U.S., and show people that, hey, you know, anime isn't just for kids. It doesn't have to be magical girls or Power Rangers or whatever. It can be serious. And I think that's really what kicked it off. You know, it's no Dragon Ball Z. It's none of that. It's just an actual human drama with a bit of a sci-fi background. So,
no, you're exactly right.
This kind of, I hope this brings more people to it.
Yeah, because that actually, I mean, the show was actually lauded for being a gateway to the medium itself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I hate to put a lot of emphasis on the descriptions in Wikipedia, but I just think that this hits it right on the head. It says, although it incorporates a wide variety of genres throughout its run, Cowboy Bebop draws most heavily from science fiction, Western, and noir films. Its most prominent thematics include adult existential inoue, loneliness, mm-hmm. and the inability to escape one's past. So all that speaks back to those quiet moments where, like pirates, I mean, these guys are going to get bounties, but they're very much like in the pirates, where it was very much feast or famine. Pirates were not living the life of luxury. They'd have one heist, one great, you know, run if they're lucky, and then a lot of waiting, a lot of staying on the ship, mm-hmm. a lot of, you know, mm-hmm. bell peppers and beef without the beef. So I think that this show, I think you're right. Whenever something new comes out, it always gets you to do retrospective, whether you're a fan or not. And I think mm-hmm. that it, by driving people to this series, back to the original series, it'll create a whole new fan base. So right. Let me ask you a question, Rob. So there was some stuff we didn't see in the show because, mm-hmm. of, you know, the characters that prohibited the use of certain plot lines. But were there certain things that you did want to see that you didn't?
Or, I really did kind of sit back and kind of review some of the old episodes, and you know, you see kind of where they took a lot of the ones that they already had and they brought that. But I think there's a lot of the ones, you know, obviously you brought up Cowboy Andy, which should have been the one with the teddy bear bomber. So Cowboy mm-hmm. Andy wasn't there. I think that's a huge one. But a lot of the stuff, you know, where they tried to bring in, here's Faye's memory. But in the anime, Ed's there. And so they go back and they find the orphanage and all that. And there's more about Ed's father and all that. But we can't talk about that because Ed's not there. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think the ones that you'd want to see really comes back to having Ed in there.
Yeah, exactly.
One other thing is they had talked about in the anime, you know, Faye was in debt for the most of the anime. And so that plot line was taken out and they just kept the amnesia. So it really just kind of comes back to the Ed episodes. I think that's really kind of it, you know? So I don't know. There could be, I think, Waltz for Venus, which is one where they were looking for the plant to help pay for surgery for one of the bounty's sister and all that, which more the human side, you know, they missed on that. Mm-hmm. There was a couple other ones, you know, Sympathy for the Devil, who, you know, they were after a bounty. He looked like a little boy who was actually 80 and stuff like that. But yeah, I think they really picked up the major episodes that they could without Ed. So, I mean, if they do come back into this, it's going to be the episodes with Ed, and mm-hmm. it's going to then be more kind of moving on to storylines that we've never touched. If there was any background notes that, you know, were made, you know, if, you know, will Faye find out really what it is? Because, you know, I think in the anime, even here, they hinted at that she was on Earth. She was born on Earth and all that. And then she was, but never why she was frozen other than some accident. So maybe, but I mean, that's part of the mystery. Do we really want to know?
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about that in the past couple of days, just because, you know, Han Solo was lauded for being a great character with little to no backstory. Then you give him a backstory like the Solo movie, and at first everybody balked at it, including myself. Now I've seen it four or five times. I've actually warmed to it quite a bit. Now again,
you've seen it four or five times. It's you like it.
Yeah. So I'm kind of, you know, I'm backpedaling to say that just because I didn't like something on the onset doesn't mean it will not have residual value on repeat viewing. However, even though that's the backstory that somebody came up with, Lawrence Kasdan and his son for the Solo movie, to me, it doesn't take away from what the actual movies are in the future. So just because you give somebody a backstory and you don't like it, again, it doesn't mean it's a bad backstory. But I think in something like this, to where just you didn't need certain things. But, you know, actually, I need to correct both yours and my statements. I was looking through some of the episodes, like Cowboy Funk is the Teddy Bomber episode. That came, that's episode 22. So that came fairly late in the original series. Now, that means Ed was part of it. Same thing with Perot LeFou, which was episode 20. Now, talk about a watershed moment for the series. That was such a left turn curveball, and everybody loved it. Now, I have to give the creators of this new show balls for putting that in with the spin that Vicious is the one who actually teed up Perot to go after Spike. So that's a new element that I think is worth it.
They remixed it. They remixed it quite well. And they had to, like we said, you know, there's no Ed. So they had to figure out how Ayn shows up. They have to figure out how they remix all this and that.
Yes.
And then, you know, at the very end, there's this kind of spoiler of they'll be back. And you're like, well, okay. They had that. There was some interesting remixes in that. But, you know, we'll have to see where it goes. And if there's more, you know, I'll watch it. I don't know if there will be, but it was good to watch, you know, I think we come back to a point you made earlier. It might've been better if they allowed it more of a weekly release that they do with some of the shows rather than the now binge everything now, we've got to have it now kind of thing that has come with the advent of Netflix. So, and you're absolutely right. I see Apple and Amazon doing more of the weekly releases, Ted Lasso, Wheel of Time, The Expanse and stuff like that. So, you know, maybe that's something that Netflix could actually sit back and take a look at. So I think though the takeaway is, you know, we talk about backstory and all that. I like to call what this is, you know, what people call it. People have, so we think backstory, that's the canon, right? But what it is when people don't like it, it's because they have their own head canon. They have their own backstory that they've created in their mind.
Very true.
And it doesn't match. And that's why people are like, this is not what I imagined them to be. And the reason we have this sort of head canon to begin with is the writing was ambiguous enough in the beginning to say, allow people leeway to think that maybe it was this, maybe it was that. It allows for, you know, discussion, healthy discussion, hopefully, maybe sometimes not healthy discussion, depending on how much of a super fan you are. But I think that's probably what it is. And that's why I come back to my point with anything that has a source material, whether it's an anime, a book, a comic, or whatever, people are going to take what they have exposed themselves, they've read it, and they said, this is probably what the writer means. And then when they see it translated to the live action screen, it's not what they thought it would be. And so that's, you're going to get that with anything.
That also shows the reverence for the property, because if something dies or it's poorly received, you know, you never see it again. But the fact that it resonates and people are able to, you know, live in this universe. Here we are 2 decades later, just like our friendship. You can rekindle it and do stuff with it. So great.
What I'll say is, For people who are new to the show, you know, this is something that's been with us. And I was actually looking back when we originally looked at it. It was most likely 1999-ish, I believe, or 2000 when we watched it, when it was released in the U.S. Again, VHS, folks. but nowadays, you know, you can buy the set, or it's now broadcast worldwide via Netflix. This is one of those things where I, you know, being the guy in Japan, heaven forbid me say this, as much of a purist as I might be, watch the English dub. It is one of the best ones out there. So if you have not seen the original, please do take the opportunity, everyone, to see it. And enjoy them both for what they are. And I hope your fans will take that advice to heart.
Well, I think, Rob, that is a good way to go out. We'll simply say, see you, Space Cowboy, and catch you on That's the next right. episode. Well, Rob, thank you for joining us. It's been a treat. Thank you, Peter Gullickers, for joining us in the top half of this, and we will talk to you next time.